This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, and you are here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates, your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. I am Elliot this week. I am joined by Jake.
Yep, my first time around.
Oh, this is your first intimate, Jake?
Yep.
Oh no, I'll treat you carefully.
Getting intimate for the very first time.
I'll be really gentle, I swear. But it's good to have you here because we want to talk about embedded precursors. And for somebody who doesn't know what that is, which, you know, the first time I heard that term, I didn't either. But basically, what we want to talk about is when a video game comes about and you play it, and somewhere within that game is another game, an older game, often from the same franchise, just kind of embedded within the product. So sometimes you might stumble across an arcade machine, or you unlock a secret Easter egg, and you end up playing like a stretch of this older game. And we've seen it a few times. Like, it's not something that's going to come in every game, obviously. This is something that's quite special, and you lose that kind of that feeling of being special if it happens within every game. But the times that it has happened, to me, it always resonates, and it's always this really nice moment. Most recently was when I was playing the newest Wolfenstein game, because both of the newest games within the Wolfenstein series did this, where there'd be like this dreamlike sequence, and all of a sudden you're playing the old school Wolfenstein game where you're kind of just knocking down doors and killing Nazis, and it's just an entirely different experience. But this awesome throwback, that's just a really fun thing.
See, it plays on a nostalgia factor for me, at least. Like, my first example of this is Sonic Generations, which is a game about the anniversary of the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. I believe in the game you purchase, using points, a Game Gear or a Mega Drive controller, and that allows you to play the entire first Sonic game, which nowadays is quite a short, quite a small game. But
see, in my memory of my childhood, that was a massive game.
When you think about it now compared to, like, other games, it was such a small game that it can be embedded into these games, which features a level from each game in the franchise anyway. It's just this huge nostalgia hit that it throws at you.
Well,
and
Sonic
very effective.
Kind of loves doing that. Like, it's not quite the same, but even the new Sonic games, like, take levels from the old ones and kind of remix them, or they just leave them as is and put them in the new game. So Sonic loves borrowing from the old, but it's really cool when it's like first game is embedded within Sonic Generations, was it? Like, that's really cool.
They love Green Hill Zone, the amount of times that's shown up in games.
Okay, but also, as somebody who's only a marginal Sonic fan, Green Hill Zone is, like, the only zone I could list right now, and there's that kind of mechanical, kind of sci-fi-y one.
Yeah.
So, like, I get why they keep reusing it, because it's, like, iconic Sonic. Ooh, that rhymes. That must be a positive sign of things to come.
Oh god, what am I in for? but you see this a lot. Like, for example, games might just not just have the entire previous game, or they may have like little snippets of the other games. For example, Tekken 5 had the arcade versions of the first three games there, and as well as the old Star Blade game, like Namco's old, like, third-person star shooter. How to describe?
Basically, not a game I've ever played.
It's this really old,
like
star
an arcade
game,
as well. Yeah. See, this seems to be the thing that happens, like, where you kind of stumble across an arcade and you are playing like an arcade game within like this like 3D action game, and it's like, oh my god! Like, all of a sudden, like, things have changed up so much, and it's kind of gone crazy. But specifically, if we're talking embedded precursors, one of the best examples I can think of, and this harkens way back to my childhood, is Donkey Kong 64. Because I was playing this on the Nintendo 64, and I love the Donkey Kong franchise because of 64. Like, that's where it kicked off for me. Yeah. But obviously, Donkey Kong existed long before 64. It was an arcade game, which featured Jumpman, not even Mario. It featured jumping over your barrels. And that whole arcade experience was reflected in Donkey Kong 64. And I remember getting all the way to the end of Donkey Kong 64, and the hardest part of that game for me was you reached a point where you had to beat the arcade game to progress. You had to beat it twice, and I beat it once, and I just couldn't do it again, and it was nightmarish. It was, like, just before the final boss battle, and I'm like, oh, no, like, why can I not beat that? And I got, my dad to help me.
But besides that, was it a good feeling when you actually came across it, like, oh, my God, this is the old one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would have been an even better feeling if I wasn't so young and naive, and I had actually played the original game first.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened with me in Wolfenstein. Like, I played the original Wolfenstein way back when, because it was quite readily available, or it had been a few times over, even though it was an older game. And I remember playing Wolfenstein The Old Blood or The New Order, and, like, getting that nostalgia rush hitting me. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they just put the entirety of the original game into this, and you just realize how far, like, video games have come.
Yeah.
You really feel it. You're like, they're both first-person shooters. They both are games where, like, grotesque blood, killing Nazis, moving around a Nazi base, but they're entirely different experiences.
It amazes you how far games you've grown up with have gone. Even just with Tekken, for example, my version of Tekken Tag Tournament 2 came with the first game, because it had every character in the series that wasn't licensed, so they could use, coming back. And you just have a look like, wow, this was such a basic, really blocky, really, like, polygonal models, very basic characters. And you're sitting there like, wow, we have come so far in just my lifetime.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the nostalgia factor of it. It's huge.
And I think franchises that have gone for a long time, they're the ones who are able to do this, right? Like, you wouldn't pick up, like, when The Last of Us 2 comes out, if that contains The Last of Us 1 within it, you'd be like, what? I'm so confused. What are you talking about?
That seems more like a special edition than it does a precursor.
Exactly. Because, you know, obviously, it functions well when it's, like, an old arcade game, and it's, like, this tiny product that can be hidden within, like, this much grander, epic scale of a game, because what the game was back in its heyday, or back in its inception, is totally different to what it is now. Like, they're two entirely different products with two entirely different budgets and scopes, and it's just, yeah, it's a really cool feeling, definitely. I want it to happen more.
Yeah, like, it's very rare. One of the examples I can think of at the moment is when playing the Halo Master Chief Collection again, there's actually a button to switch to the original graphics.
Yeah.
To toggle back and forth between them. You're like, wow, this has changed. Sometimes not for the better, but sometimes you just like the original.
So a few games have done that. Yeah. And that's, I always love that. Like, that is such a cool feature to just hit a button and it's like, oh, I am playing the original game.
I'm time traveling.
And then you hit the button again and it's like, no, now I'm playing the remaster. And you can see the differences, like, just so apparently and so readily. And that's really cool as well. There are other examples of games that are not quite the same. They're not embedded precursors, but they might be like an embedded...
It's more a callback.
Yeah, or a callback, or like, I know Mario does it a lot. So, for instance, in the latest Super Mario Odyssey game, there are 2D sections of Mario.
There is even actually one of the superstars you get. I don't know if it's post-game or if it's just I just found it after I finished it. But it's basically a replica of the first level of the first game.
Right.
And everyone's sitting in a cinema. So you come into a stage, you go into the screen itself, and that level is just playing the original game, and you come out of it like, crap, did I just play the whole first thing again?
And sometimes you realize how, like, small those games were.
Yeah.
Because it, like, things through nostalgia always reflect bigger than they really are. And I think that happened to me with Wolfenstein. It happened to me with Donkey Kong as well, where it's like, oh, I actually thought these games were massive, but I just kind of, they were like a tiny section within a much larger game. So they can't possibly have been that massive.
But you've got to love when they're hidden as well. Like, I know only today, actually, I've managed to get Elliot to learn where to find the original Prince of Persia in Sands of Time.
Right, yeah. So that's something I never even knew was hidden.
Like,
so
surprise.
I love the Prince of Persia series, and I've played Sands of Time a few times now, but I never knew the original Prince of Persia was hidden within that game. Do you know, remember how to access it, or is it just some, like, really long, hidden...
See, I didn't actually play it through that. I played it through, I think, the Wii version of... one of the, like, the re-releases of the Wii, on the Wii version actually had the original in the menu of it. So I didn't have to go and find it.
Okay.
Because I went the right way. But no, for example, Day of the Tentacle had the original Maniac Mansion built into it in one of the arcade machines, which is interesting because one of the characters is from Maniac Mansion.
So there's a bit of a crossover.
Wait,
did they comment on it?
Yes, they do. That's,
That's such a Day of the Tentacle.
It's so meta, I love it. But yeah, it's this interesting idea of suddenly it's canon, suddenly it's part of the world. It actually is a game in itself, but also the characters playing it.
Yeah, it can, like, it can feel a little immersion breaking, I guess. Like sometimes if you're really invested within a world and then all of a sudden you're playing an arcade game that is the game you're playing, but much older kind of thing. I can see how that can be immersion breaking, but sometimes it's just really, it's just such a nice thing to, like, come across. I remember playing Uncharted 4, and it's not quite the same because it's not an embedded precursor, but it's an embedded older game from the same developer. Because during Uncharted 4, there's a sequence where you sit down with your wife and you end up playing the original Crash Bandicoot. And obviously, that's they're both Naughty Dog IPs, which is why they can do it so easily.
Was this before or after Insane Trilogy? I can't remember.
This was before.
So and then that whole game came out and blew it out of the water.
Wow. I mean, the Insane Trilogy is a whole nother topic of conversation.
Yeah.
But I remember that feeling where you're playing this game and it's like, oh no, they actually want me to play Crash Bandicoot within Uncharted, just like during this really nice cutscene. And it's like, ah, that it was just such a good feeling because not only are you bonding with your partner, like in the game by playing this, but you're really feeling, like, what they're feeling. And it's just such a strange but really cool way to do that.
We've got to love it. It's a nice little subtle poke, like, look at what else we made.
Yeah, and we that's what names. It is, right? At the end of the day, that's why developers will do these kind of hidden, embedded precursors, because they want their players to get that kind of rush and nostalgia and be like, oh, yeah, I remember this. And it's such a nice way to do it. Like, we could do a whole nother topic all about Easter eggs, but I think, which, by the way, is like a hidden detail within a game or a hidden secret.
Pretty sure we have done on the Intimates about Easter eggs or something.
I'm sure we probably have.
I think I've seen it, yeah.
But, like, this is, to me, embedded precursors, it's like the best kind of Easter egg.
Yeah.
Because they've put in so much effort and so much detail to chuck this into that. And I think as a consumer, like, I really appreciate it. And I want to see it more and more frequently.
And sometimes it helps us understand it. Like, for example, most copies of Alice Madness Returns came with the original American McGee's Alice, which helps you understand the storyline behind it. Why is Alice suddenly so psychotic? Why is she in an asylum?
Right.
Like, where does this come from?
Yeah, so it can give, like, kind of that kind of detail that you might be missing.
What on earth is going on?
Well, see, and I'd much prefer that than for them to, like, explain it with a whole bunch of exposition or expect you to just know already. Whereas something like that is just such a clever way to say, hey, remember this? It might be important.
Just quickly, if you could have any previous game inside upcoming game from any franchise, which would you pick?
You are asking a seriously hard-hitting question.
I know. That's why I blindsided you.
Do you have an answer? Like, can I ponder while you answer?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I won't be listening because I'm going to be thinking.
Anyone who knows me knows I'm obsessed with Tomb Raider, especially because I spent the last night, this is the day after they released a trailer for Shadow of the Tomb Raider. If that game does not contain any callbacks, or if it contains the entire first game from the original publisher, I will lose it. I will just sit there screaming like, it's here!
But that's like the perfect franchise to do it, right?
Because it's the end of the origin story, in a sense. So it's like, here's where you'll go next.
It's one of those situations where it could be entirely immersion-breaking, though. Like, Lara Croft playing as Lara Croft. Like, how does that canon? Like, how does that fit?
I'd love that to be canon, or just someone else playing as her.
But at the same time, like, it's one of those franchises that has been going on for such a long time, and the original product is so different from what we have now because technology and game development has just come such a long way that you can throw that in and all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, I remember this.
Actually,
this is crazy.
That reminds me that the original polygonal model was actually available in the remake of the first game.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And it's so weird to just see her jumping around, still looking all blocky with this beautifully rendered environment and all the beautifully rendered animations. And you're sitting there like, wow, she was triangular, wasn't she?
She was many many she of her assets were triangular in shape.
Yes.
And now we've got curves as a technology.
You have realistic curves as a technology.
Hooray, curves. I reckon. Okay, I was supposed to use that time to think, but I instead Come was on. Too excited by your answer. But I don't know.
You said you weren't going to listen.
That's true, I lied. There are some definitely old school games that I want to see revisited, and maybe this is a good way to do it. So, for instance, on the Sega, there was a game called Gain Ground.
Yes.
Which is a really interesting property that I just, like, I'm desperate for. Like, that's the kind of game that could fit within a game perfectly, because it's just easy interactions, but there's actual depth to it, and... If you don't know what Gain Ground is, check it out, because I think it's one of those games that will never die. The original is still awesome to play. I played it kind of recently because Sega likes to do their collections where they'll release a bunch of old school stuff. And Gain Ground has always been the one that has stood out to me as far as like... it stood the test of time. It doesn't feel dated because the graphics were always isometric and simplistic, and it's all about the gameplay and your tactics to approaching it and that fun kind of cooperative experience. So Gain Ground, if they ever did like a soft reboot of the Gain Ground franchise, which they'll never do, but if they did, put the original in there. That would be amazing.
It's always a tempting idea when you're looking at, okay, so this new game's coming out. It's been such and such a long time since the last one. Could they possibly insert it? Sometimes it's not possible. Like, you're not going to, for example, the next Final Fantasy is not going to have an entire one inside it.
No. And look, sometimes you wouldn't want it. For instance, the newest God of War game,
yeah.
It's too serious for it. Like, if there was, like, some Easter egg where you came across... I don't even know how they would do it. Maybe, like, a spiritual vision or something, and you're playing old God of War, like...
Or like that a flashback, would be cool. Something similar.
Sure. That would be cool in a way, but at the same time, I'd be like... You might have just ruined like the whole atmosphere you'd been building up towards.
Especially so, with the changes in setting and stuff like that. If they've moved on from what it originally was, if it's so different, is it not going to really mesh well?
Yeah.
It's going to break the immersion and it's going to break sort of the experience.
Whereas something like Wolfenstein is such a satirical game and it's always making fun of itself that when you put the original Wolfenstein in the reboot, it doesn't feel abnormal. Like, it feels fun.
It just kind of works. Yeah. Really, yeah.
It works really well. Anyway, we've been talking about embedded precursors when a old school game goes into the newer version of that game and how they've done that in the past and the kind of hidden Easter eggs around that. Jake, thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
I have been Elliot, and please join us next week when we get even more intimate on another gaming topic.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.